Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we've got a whole stack of predictions and analyses, and we're going to try and cut through the noise to really figure out what's defining the year 2026.
You know, it feels less like just turning a page on the calendar and more like we're hitting a real inflection point.
An inflection point? How so?
Well, the sources we're looking at all point to 2026 as the year this new 21st century global order stops feeling theoretical and really starts to become concrete. And that means a lot of old norms, decades-old norms, are getting demolished.
And that's where the tension is, isn't it? Because at the center of all this unpredictability, you have the figure of President Trump.
Absolutely. He's central. He's driving instability, yes, but also this massive kind of unexpected risk-taking in the economy.
And it's forcing allies and rivals to completely recalculate their own positions.
That's fascinating. Every major trend we're seeing, geopolitics, markets, technology, it all seems to be speeding up and getting more fragile at the exact same time.
Okay, so let's unpack all of this. Our mission here is to give you that clear perspective you need. We'll start with the political fractures in America and how they're echoing globally. Then we'll pivot to the strange economic experiments going on with tariffs and debt.
And we'll finish up with the tech revolutions that, you know, actually offer some real hope for progress.
Let's dive in. Politically, America is heading toward its 250th birthday, the semi-quincentennial. And we can't even agree on how to celebrate it.
It's pretty stunning when you think about it. The celebration itself is a symbol of the division. You've got two rival national commissions planning completely separate events.
So on one hand, you have the America 250 Commission, the nonpartisan one.
Right, co-chaired by people like the Obamas, the Bushes. They're trying to pull together this broad, comprehensive American story. But then you have the Trump-led Task Force 250.
Which was set up by executive order with a very specific goal.
A very specific goal. Their stated mission is to extol American greatness and to, and this is their formal language, extirpate what they call divisive narratives. It's a celebration built on a partisan foundation.
But is this really that new? I mean, think back to 1976, the bicentennial. The country was reeling from Watergate, from Vietnam, but they still managed a patriotic pageant.
That's a great question. And the difference really is institutional trust. In 76, trust in Congress, the media, the military, it was higher. And crucially, distrust in the government was bipartisan.
Everyone was skeptical together.
Exactly. Now, that trust is just completely polarized. The past itself has become a partisan battleground. The story you get depends entirely on which commission you're listening to.
And all that chaos at home is the backdrop for foreign policy that is, well, intentionally inconsistent. This America First strategy.
Means whatever he says it means on any given day. The sources call it predictably unpredictable.
That's the perfect phrase.
It is. And on one level, it works. It extracts concessions. You see allies like Japan, like Taiwan, jacking up their defense spending because they're genuinely afraid of being abandoned.
So they're paying more for their own security, which is the whole point of the strategy.
It is. But the cost is huge. You're alienating allies, creating this massive strategic vacuum. And someone is always ready to step into a vacuum.
And that someone is China.
China sees this as a golden opportunity to win what they call the global narrative war.
Yeah.
Their core pitch to the rest of the world is stability. It's, you know where you are with us.
So while America looks chaotic, China offers reliable loans, predictable infrastructure deals.
Exactly. And that pitch is really, really effective for governments that are terrified of a sudden tweet changing their entire economic future.
Okay, so China thinks it's winning, but success can breed overconfidence. They had a good 2025, about 5% growth. Their stock market beat the S&P 500. So what are the risks for them in 2026?
The sources point to three big temptations for China to overreach. The first is trade, just swamping the world with exports.
We're already seeing that, right?
We are. Their exports surged 11% in the first 9 months of 2025. If they keep pushing that industrial surplus out, they risk triggering a massive tariff escalation in the West, a real trade war.
Okay, that's temptation one. What's number two?
Taiwan. Not necessarily a full invasion, but an escalation of pressure through other means.
A gray zone campaign.
That's the one. Things that are short of war, but are still coercive. Imagine a customs inspection regime around the island. It's not an embargo, but it paralyzes trade and creates huge uncertainty.
And with Trump's position being unclear, China might think they can get away with it.
They might just calculate that the U.S. would tolerate it.
Yeah.
The third temptation is a bit more technical, but it's critical. It's about setting new global rules.
Specifically for supply chains.
Yes. They're pushing this global governance initiative and, More concretely, compulsory licensing schemes for rare earths.
Which would be a huge deal. Rare earths are in everything.
Everything from your phone to advanced defense systems. And compulsory licensing basically means China gets to decide who uses these resources and on what terms. It's weaponizing the supply chain.
Okay, the geopolitics are clearly volatile. Let's shift to how this is all hitting home. Let's talk about the economy. The sources we've read call the current U.S. economic program the most radical in a century.
It is, because you've got three things happening at once that we've never really seen together.
Yeah.
You have tariff rates from the 1930s. You have government deficits wider than any time outside a war or pandemic.
Borrowing at 6% of GDP is massive.
It's massive. And on top of that, you have this sustained assault on the independence of the Federal Reserve. Nobody knows how those three things interact.
And that's creating this fog of uncertainty for corporations. How are they even trying to plan?
Well, they're trying a few things. First, just pass on the costs. If you're a Walmart or an Hermes, you have the scale or the brand power to just hike prices.
Which just fuels inflation.
Right. The second strategy is belt tightening. We saw two-thirds of S&P 500 firms cut headcount leading up to July 2025. Uncertainty just kills investment and hiring.
And the third strategy is the big one. Shifting supply chains.
A massive reshuffle.
Hmm.
Apple is a key example, aiming to move most of its U.S.-bound iPhone manufacturing to India by the end of 2026. But that requires trillions in global capital spending.
And a side effect of all this uncertainty.
A lobbying boom. A massive one. When everything is subject to executive whim, you have to buy political access. Companies like Bristol-Myers Squibb, Eli Lilly, they're on track to double their lobbying spend just to get some clarity.
Let's talk about the financial risks here. The stock market, for one, the AI boom feels like it's papering over some pretty deep cracks.
That is the key vulnerability. AI-dependent stocks are now 44% of the S&P 500's market cap, and they're trading at a P.E. ratio of 31.
31. And what's the ratio for the rest of the index?
It's 19.
Wow. So that means investors are pricing in an enormous amount of future growth.
An enormous amount. All that hope is baked into the price today. If AI adoption disappoints, even a little bit, you could see trillions in household wealth just vanish.
Yes, and the second big risk is in the bond market. With all this borrowing and the Fed's independence in question, investors have to be getting nervous.
Nervous is putting it lightly. You have Jerome Powell's potential retirement in May 2026. You have the president potentially filling multiple seats on the Fed's board. This all raises the risk of a bond market panic.
And what's the fear there? Just inflation.
Inflation, yes, but also something called financial repression. Basically, the government holds interest rates artificially low, below inflation, to help manage its own debt.
So savers and investors are forced to subsidize the government.
Exactly. And if investors think that's coming, they will dump U.S. bonds, and that would cause a global shock. A massive one.
Okay, speaking of AI, let's look at the adoption side. The investment numbers are just staggering. $400 billion into infrastructure in 2025 alone.
But only about $50 billion in annual revenue so far. So 2026 is the year the focus shifts from building AI to actually adopting it. And that brings up jobs.
Right. We're hearing about these virtual agents now and campaigns like Stop Hiring Humans. It's unsettling.
It is. And it's not about factory jobs anymore. This is about junior white-collar roles.
And the data shows who's getting hit first.
Yeah, the payroll data is pretty clear. Junior workers, 22 to 25-year-olds, in roles like entry-level software development, we've seen a double-digit decline in their employment since 2022. The whole corporate structure is changing from that classic pyramid shape.
To a diamond shape, maybe? Fewer at the top and bottom, big middle.
That's one possibility. The more hopeful model is the hourglass.
The hourglass.
Yeah, the idea is that new graduates who are AI native, who master this stuff immediately, are so productive they can actually leapfrog the entire middle management layer. But the immediate risk for 2026 is that squeeze on the entry-level worker who's now competing with a very cheap virtual agent.
It's easy to get bogged down in all this uncertainty. But the sources also point to these massive technological breakthroughs that are happening no matter who's in charge.
Right. There are some really hopeful things happening outside of the geopolitical mess.
Let's start with a medical one, this coming buffet of next-generation weight loss drugs.
This is a genuine revolution going global. We're moving way beyond those first-gen injectables. The big change is convenience. You're getting pills.
Oral semaglutide or 4-ketoglipron.
Exactly. Showing 16.6%, 12.4% weight loss. And the pill form is absolutely vital.
Why is that so crucial for global access?
Refrigeration. The injectables need a strict cold chain to be distributed. That's impossible in many poorer countries.
Yeah.
Pills just leapfrog that entire infrastructure problem.
And then there's the one they've nicknamed the Godzilla of the injectables.
Ah, yes. Lilly's triple agonist retatrutide. The efficacy is just unbelievable. Phase 2 trials showed a 24% loss of body weight over 48 weeks.
24%? That's comparable to bariatric surgery.
It is. But the biggest shift globally is patent expirations. In 2026, the patent for the first-generation drug, semaglutide, expires in India, China, Brazil.
Which means generics.
And that could slash prices by 80%. The model suggests that could save between 2 and 3 million lives a year worldwide. It's a total game-changer for global health.
Okay, the second big breakthrough is in energy, the geothermal renaissance.
Yeah, this is so interesting. Enhanced geothermal is set to go from being a tiny niche source, less than 1% of global electricity, to being a major player.
And the technology is different now. This isn't just about finding a hot spring.
Not at all. It's about applying innovations from the oil and gas industry, like fracking and multilateral drilling, to basically tap into the Earth's heat almost anywhere.
And we're starting to see this work at a commercial scale.
We are. A company called Fervo Energy cut its drilling time by 70% and just signed the biggest ever commercial contract with a California utility. It proves the model works. The Department of Energy now thinks geothermal could provide 300 gigawatts by 2050.
To put that in perspective, that's...
Yes, triple America's entire current nuclear fleet. And the key is that it's firm power. It runs 24/7 no matter the weather. It's the dark horse in the race to decarbonize.
Before we move to Europe, a quick sort of cultural note from the sources. 2026 is the year we finally say goodbye to the U.S. penny.
The end of an era. The economics just don't work anymore. It costs 3.69 cents to make a 1 cent coin. The mint loses $85 million a year on it.
So its time is up. Though I do think the sources are right, it will live on forever as the thing you use to stop a wobbly chair.
Exactly. Its ultimate purpose revealed.
Okay, finally, let's turn to Europe. They're facing huge challenges, protectionism, aging populations. But our sources see two big tailwinds for growth in 2026.
The first one is just consumer spending.
Yeah.
European households have been saving a lot of cash since the pandemic. As things hopefully stabilize a bit, that money is going to start flowing back into the economy.
And the second tailwind, defense.
It's Europe's rearmament. The numbers are just staggering. We're talking about an increase of 700 to 800 billion in defense spending between 2022 and 2028.
And Germany's really leading this. They've done something pretty significant with their debt rules.
They have. They exempted defense spending from their strict constitutional debt brake, the Schuldenbremse. That's a huge political and fiscal signal.
It means this isn't a temporary surge. This is a fundamental long-term restructuring.
Absolutely. And you see firms like Rheinmetall expanding capacity like crazy. The defense industry is suddenly a major bright spot for Europe's economy.
So when you pull all this together, the theme for 2026 really is tension, isn't it? You have this incredible technological progress, AI, new drugs, geothermal running right into this wall of geopolitical and economic uncertainty.
And under it all is the environment. That's the ticking clock. 2026 is projected to be one of our last years in the black on the 1.5 degrees Celsius carbon budget.
Meaning we could exceed the threshold by the end of the year.
There's a significant chance. And that forces really hard choices about overshoot and relying on incredibly expensive technologies to pull carbon back out of the atmosphere later.
You know, it brings to mind Homer's Odysseus. He was living in his own post-war, post-truth world, struggling with all these modern-sounding problems, inequality, bad management, his own cleverness causing destruction.
Yeah, and he only found peace when he learned from his mistakes and decided to just live a less chaotic life.
That feels like a powerful way to frame the year. So if we accept that 2026 is going to be defined by mercurial leaders and massive disruption, here's a thought to leave you with.
What are the specific guardrails that will prove most valuable, whether it's in our institutions, our investments, or just our own critical thinking? When the world's most powerful people are also the most unpredictable, how do you, the listener, build the resilience you'll need to navigate what's coming? That's the real question for 2026.